Diartano Dei Consilium succedimus in loco principis apostolorum, eorum lempe, quorum doctrina et predicatio, iussu divino.
The voice of Pope Pius XI, who with this speech pronounced exactly 80 years ago, officially gave birth to Vatican Radio. That momentous day on February the 12th, 1931, marked the first time in the long history of the Church that a Pope had sent his voice throughout the world. Vatican Radio's mission, then and now, is to broadcast news about the Pope, the Universal Church and world news, and help listeners to evaluate today's problems in the light of the Church's teaching.
Mira sane ope marconiana.
The radio's transmitting station was built by the inventor of radio, Guglielmo Marconi, and was inaugurated by Pope Pius with that radio message in Latin, written by the pontiff himself and addressed to the whole world, in which he stressed the universality of the gospel message. If we browse through the press coverage of that day, the journalists clearly convey the intense excitement triggered by that historic event. The Vatican's own newspaper, the Osservatore Romano, wrote,
"In Rome, all the radio sets were turned on. Groups of people gathered around the wonderful apparatus to listen. Loudspeakers were placed outside many electric and appliance shops. There were crowds everywhere, blocking the traffic in some areas."
In Britain, an article in the News Chronicle Daily read,
"For the first time, the voice of a Pope was heard in London and by millions of other believers about the world. 3,500 Catholics stood for hours in Westminster Cathedral, waiting to hear the voice of the pontiff."
Whilst an editorial in the New York Herald said,
"Few events in the history of the world can compare with the profound impact the head of the Holy Roman See made during his address directed to the entire planet. This is a miracle of science, and no less, a miracle of faith."
Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Aquí Radio Vaticano, programa español.
Ici Radio Vatican.
这里是梵蒂冈广播电台.
El Mejdu li Yesu al Messiah.
Cari fratelli e sorelle.
Pope Benedict on Sunday arrived back at the Vatican for the recitation.
Pagine e fogli.
Chiedete di serbati.
Date una carezza ai vostri bambini.
Treffpunkt Weltkirche.
80 years on from its inauguration, Vatican Radio is still going strong and now offers programmes in over 40 languages that are broadcast via the internet, satellite, as well as via the more traditional shortwave, medium wave and FM radio bands. But let's review some of the highlights of the radio's history since its inauguration and find out more about its future direction. I sat down with Sean Patrick Lovett, director of Vatican Radio's English programme and of its live Italian channel, who has worked at the radio since 1977. I began by asking him, how many languages did the radio start off with?
Well, it started out in Latin, the Scientiarum Nuncius Radiophonicus. It was really a scientific programme. Pius XI was a closet scientist. He was fascinated by this idea that you could speak into a piece of metal on this side of the world and be heard right across the other side of the world. And they were very simple programmes. But within about 5 years after the Vatican Radio's inauguration in 1931, the radio was already broadcasting in five different languages, including English, Italian, French, Spanish and German. And they were regular programs being broadcast in these five different languages.
Has its essential role and mission changed substantially since then?
Not according to the mission statement. The mission statement of Vatican Radio is basically that our charge is to get the Pope's message out as quickly and as effectively as possible. I know that's a kind of narrow paraphrase, but that's what it is, and to use whatever means possible, whatever technical means possible there is at our disposal. And that's what we've been doing for 80 years. We started with shortwave, we moved into FM. When satellite broadcast arrived, we were up there with the best of them. And now, yes, we're into internet technology just like anyone else. We were amongst the very first, and I love reminding people about this. The Vatican Radio was among the very, very first radio stations to use podcasting, which we dubbed Godcasting when it first
began. Yes, I remember.
But we've always been in the avant-garde of looking how technology can help us get that message out.
Okay, but looking back, first of all, at some of the highlights of its history, it performed a very valuable service, didn't it, during the Second World War, when it transmitted messages for people trying to retrace their loved ones, prisoners of war and refugees. But it's not something that's publicised or not sort of talked about a lot. And yet there were a huge amount of messages, weren't there, that went out.
We have a very short memory, a very short historical memory. I mean, even before that, looking at the main moments, the very inauguration of Vatican Radio. The day after Vatican Radio was inaugurated, on the 12th of February 1931, the New York Herald had a headline entitled Scientific Miracle. That's how big it was. The United States sent a film crew on a boat out to Italy, out to Rome, to film the inauguration with Pius XI. It was considered something extraordinary that you could build a radio station that would have a worldwide outreach. Then certainly during the Second World War, the radio played a very important role. We know that the Vatican Radio was the only radio station denouncing the existence of the concentration camps, while many of the Allies were tending to look the other way. Vatican Radio was outrightly denouncing their existence, so much so that Goebbels wanted to bomb out Vatican Radio.
It was banned in Germany, wasn't it? Its broadcast, like other radio stations.
Yes, but there were attempts. There was an attempt to bomb Vatican Radio. If you take a visit to the Vatican Gardens today and you walk up to the station, you will see pockmarks on the side of the station wall, which are the results of a gunner's bullets in an attempt during the war to drop a bomb on Vatican Radio. It was considered an extremely uncomfortable presence.
But despite it kept on broadcasting.
We never stopped broadcasting. Another important contribution came after the war. At the end of the war, one of the great tragedies, little talked about tragedies of the war, was the issue of displaced and missing persons. Your husband, father, brother had gone off to war, wherever, and hadn't been heard of since. And Vatican Radio set up under the invitation of Pope Pius XII at that stage, this missing persons announcement service, broadcasting over 1.5 million messages around the world.
It's an incredible number.
And reuniting families, I mean, literally reuniting families. People were able to find their loved ones or get news or simply discover that their husband, brother, father had been killed and they could go and find out where he'd been buried. I mean, very moving human stories.
Now, after the war, of course, the radio expanded enormously, particularly with countries behind the Iron Curtain, as it was then, and, you know, took on more languages. Moving forward further to...
Stop right there.
Okay.
Stop right there, because that's another point which is extremely interesting. And again, our historical memories tend to be very selective. During the Cold War, I joined Vatican Radio in 1977, so I lived through that Cold War. I remember very, very clearly. And when I started teaching communications at the Gregorian University, I had a student from Latvia. Latvia was a particularly repressive communist regime. Churches were closed down, they were turned into sports stadiums and so forth. And she used to tell this story in class of her father tuning their portable radio on the kitchen table to Vatican Radio. He didn't know what was being broadcast, but it didn't matter. The important thing was, since he couldn't possess a Bible or any religious literature, he risked imprisonment or forced labor for doing so, he could at least tune into Vatican Radio.
Although he'd been found out, presumably, there,
and
too.
She would talk about, she would tell the story of how her mother used to run from the kitchen to the front door to check whether the spy might be listening at the door on the landing and they could be reported. And she'd rush back to the kitchen and say, turn it down, turn it down. And he would turn it up, because it was the only gesture of defiance that he could perform to show that he had some kind of connection with his faith and a connection with Rome.
Okay, so moving on, though, to, let's say, more modern times, I think one of the key moments in its modern history came during the illness, the death of Pope John Paul II and the election of Pope Benedict. I mean, we saw extraordinary scenes. The radio was in the thick of it. And its website was updated in real time with the events by now in more than 30 languages. I mean, how many people were listening in or clicking in to us then? I mean, it was an extraordinary role for the radio, wasn't it?
Well, ideally, the whole world was, I mean, either directly or indirectly because of our rebroadcasting of the event. But that's always been part of who we are and what we do. The Vatican Radio has always broadcast major events in the Church, including the Second Vatican Council, the elections of the popes, the funerals of the popes. One of my first jobs here at Vatican Radio was to do the live commentary for the funeral of Pope Paul VI, who died on the 6th of August 1978, and that was the extraordinary year of the three popes. A month later, I was doing the inauguration of John Paul I, and then his funeral, and then the inauguration of John Paul II.
Well practiced by the end.
Well, yes. I'm looking forward to doing the beatification of John Paul
II. Indeed, that's going to be another major event. Right, Vatican Radio's 75th anniversary was marked soon afterwards, of course, by a very special visit by Pope Benedict to its headquarters here. Have all the popes visited the radio, well, with the exception of Pope John Paul I, because of his very brief reign? Have all the popes come here?
They have. Paul VI visited Vatican Radio the day after his election, and Paul VI was a turning point. Paul VI was an incredible intellectual, a very curious man, and someone who understood the power of media and the power of technology and wanted to invest in it. And to show how much he wanted to invest in Vatican Radio, he visited the station the day after he was elected and gave that extraordinary speech where he says, what is the point of having a wonderful instrument if you don't have someone to work that instrument and that instrument doesn't have the right kind of content? So he gave a great impetus to Vatican Radio's production and to the number of languages that we broadcast in.
Right, talking of languages, that first message broadcast by Pope Pius XI 80 years ago was in Latin. And some people are actually surprised that the radio doesn't have a specific program in Latin. You know, it has, okay, masses in Latin, but, you know, given that it's the official language of the Church, why is that?
That's a question to ask our superiors. You should ask Father Lombardi that question. Many people do ask, yes. And his reply is that our liturgical programs are in Latin, and that Latin is not considered a living language. So it would be a very elitist kind of audience. And well, we have our Latin lover on the English program as well. But it's considered something too elite to invest in as a complete language program.
Do we have any idea how many people listen to us or click on our websites now? This is another question I'm often asked.
Well, it's easy enough to check on the number of visits to the websites. It's impossible to gauge how many people listen to Vatican Radio because so much of what we do is rebroadcast by local radio stations. Anyone can download our programming and rebroadcast that on their local stations, and they have their local audiences. So we work almost as a sort of a domino effect. It's impossible to know at the end how many people are actually listening.
Do we know in which countries there are most listeners? Is it China?
To the whole of Vatican Radio?
To a
particular program. Not so much listeners. People visit the Chinese website.
In vast numbers.
In huge numbers. In ever-increasing numbers. Because where else would you go to get news in Chinese about the Catholic Church, if not the Vatican website? And the same thing is happening, another phenomenon is happening in that regard with our Arabic program. More and more people are visiting the Arabic website to get news of the Church in the Arabic language.
Right. It was only a couple of years ago, in fact, in May 2009, that Vatican Radio announced that it was going to be broadcasting commercial advertising for the first time in its history, I believe. The decision was made to meet its rising costs. What are those costs?
Well, the costs are published every year. We're a big red blotch on the Vatican's budget. But then why wouldn't we be, insofar as we're at the service of the Holy See? The idea of the advertising was that it seemed
It's like a child who's been living at home for 80 years, and parents say, well, you know, we don't mind you not paying rent or anything, but it might be nice if you could pay the phone bill every now and again. So that's what the advertising covers. It about covers our phone bill.
Vatican Radio has in the last few years, you know, embraced some of the newest means of communication like YouTube, Twitter, and you mentioned podcasting earlier. Can you tell us a bit more about this and whether there are any other new projects in store and what we can expect in the future? What direction it's moving?
We're moving in the direction the technology is moving. We've always been in the avant-garde of technology. We've always tried to keep pace with technology. It's in our mission statement that we will use all means available. So we look around and we see what is being used and we try to plug into that and latch onto that and see where it can take us. But technology is moving so quickly. If we'd had this conversation a year ago, I would have said Twitter was the thing and we're all tweeting our news items. Well, it's already superseded. It's a year later. We now have a new project called Vatican Tick, which brings together news items from different sources in the Vatican, provides us kind of almost like a news agency of what's happening in the Vatican. Goodness knows what it will be at this time next year. It really is a case of trying to keep up with the changes and take full advantage of them.
Okay, sure. Well, before we end, you've been here for over 30 years and there's probably memories of people who've been there even before that. Looking back over the radio's history, are there any especially memorable or colourful anecdotes concerning the radio and its employees that you'd like to share with us?
In my own experience, the year of the three popes was extraordinary. The death of Paul VI, the election of John Paul I, the election of John Paul II. And then the many trips with John Paul II to different places around the world, broadcasting in Alaska from an Indian teepee in the middle of the marshlands, going with the Pope to India and going through the House of the Dying with Mother Teresa of Calcutta, visiting Australia. It's the places associated with papal visits would be huge highlights.
I was speaking to Sean Patrick Lovett, director of Vatican Radio's English programme and of its live Italian channel.